Come on, people! It's time to live it up!
Hi, it's Rosemary Rodriguez. Welcome to the director's chair on weplayradio.com. For those of you who are just tuning in for the first time, I'm a director who directed a couple movies. The newest one is Silver Skies and then some TV shows. And the director's chair is the place that we talk about directing, producing, writing, and anything that comes up. But our main focus is collaboration. So, you know, on this episode, I'm like really excited. I've been acting like a little kid, like trying to set up and stuff. Because we have a very special guest, Mike Coulter. Thank you. Also known as Luke Cage.
Hello, hello, hello.
So just to say that besides you started in the Marvel Netflix Jessica Jones series, and now you have your own series, Luke Cage, and you'll be in the upcoming Defenders series.
Yes.
Pretty big deal. You're also on The Good Wife, Agent X, The Following, and I got to touch base on this a little bit. Men in Black 3.
Men in Black 3, yes.
I was super excited when I saw you there. But we'll get to that. So welcome. And how are you?
I'm great. I wish I had worn my Jessica Jones sweatshirt or my Luke Cage sweatshirt just so I could be cool like you. That would be awesome.
You know what it is? It's like, you know, because I've been doing also other people's podcasts and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of like, it's just a fun world. And it's just really fun to me, like, because I really connected with the character. And, you know, it's not necessarily my world, but I love that world.
I love the characters. Yeah. A lot of people connect with the character. The best part for me is when I'm out and about. I like it when people tell me that they saw the show, but they didn't have any connection to the show prior to watching it because they were brought into it by another person. And someone referred them to the show, or their spouse pulled them in, or their spouse said, you know, check this out. Or a friend said, you might like this. And that's the best part because, you know, Marvel has its own built-in audience. So it's nice when you can kind of branch out. And I think that's what this whole mission of all these Marvel series by Netflix is really kind of doing. You're kind of focusing on people who are not necessarily into the PG-13 family-oriented cinematic world that has been presented before, which is a great project. But now we're trying to get a little more adult for the people.
Yeah, and
who
also
hang
maybe
out,
not
yeah.
the people watching the other shows like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff too.
Absolutely.
It's
absolutely.
Like really broadening their universe. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really smart because they've got the movie thing, the special effects and all that budget stuff. And then the TV stuff or the Netflix stuff really focuses on character.
Mm-hmm. Diversify.
And they're very relatable characters.
I think so.
You know, so you got the heroes and you got the broken people and it's kind of exciting. So you've been doing a lot of press for Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You did something at the TV Academy last night.
Yep, just was there last night, came to support. We had a lot of people in the audience who were big Marvel fans. And they're also voters. And so this is kind of campaign season. And it's really nice because, you know, shows like this, Marvel shows, not your typical, you know, campaign fare. That's kind of something different because it's gotten so much acclaim. And I'm really happy for Melissa Rosenberg, who's a writer. And I'm happy for the brass at Marvel because it's nice to get, you know, recognized as much as this business is about doing it because you love it. It's nice for somebody to get, you know, to say, hey, you know, you're doing a good job or we think you're worthy of some recognition here. It also got a Peabody Award recently, which
That's
is
right.
awesome.
That's
awesome.
Right. That's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great to be embraced by critics and by the popular audience, like and of all ages.
Yeah.
Which is like so cool. But also for you, excuse me, I'm sure it's not like a heartache to be hanging out with Rachel Taylor, Kristen Ritter, Carrie Ann Moss. And Melissa Rosenberg, like you've got these gorgeous women around you on Jessica
Jones. I know. I literally just sent an email. We were chain emailing the other last night because after this thing was over, they had the press scrum and everyone came up for pictures and autographs. And we all kind of got fanned out and spread about the party. And so I did my rounds, and after a while I had to go back home, and I didn't have time to go say goodbye to anybody. It's just kind of like, you know, I'll see you soon because we have other events to do.
Right.
And so we emailed each other, and everybody was like, oh, we're so good to see everybody. And it was, you know, such a great panel and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I just said, you know, it was so nice being like the only guy on a panel, all these beautiful women.
Exactly.
I was like, it's a great experience. Thanks guys for having me, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, it was awesome. You know,
that's going to be different than when you're doing out doing press for Luke Cage.
For sure. Absolutely. It's like a whole different crew. It's just a completely different crew. I was so fortunate to be a part of this one.
And you're going to be number one on that one.
That's what they say.
So this is kind of prepping you,
right?
That's
what they say, yeah. It's kind of like one of those things where you get a warm-up. You get a chance to like kind of stretch your legs a little bit before you have to like kind of carry the load.
It's a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So does it feel daunting at all? Do you feel like now that you've done the Jessica Jones thing, you're ready for it?
Yeah, I mean, we filmed 6-7 months of Cage, and I just looked at it like it was kind of like it was exactly pretty much the same crew from mm-hmm. Jessica mm-hmm. Jones, except for, you know, Kristen and the girls that you named and Melissa.
Right.
I mean, obviously I was missing the essential cast, but the behind the scenes crew.
It's all the same.
All the same. So we stopped for about 3 weeks, not even a month. I went home. Had a small break, not much of a break, and came right back. And I just felt like I just continued without the other actress, and just kept coming in, and I was playing the same character, but a lot, you know, it's a lot of different things that were thrown at me, different narrative completely, different direction,
right.
But ultimately just
and
more
some different
of,
directors.
Different directors for sure.
Right, right.
We were lucky enough to have a few of the same directors. I definitely tried to get a lot of directors to come back, as mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. I was so bummed you weren't in my Jessica Jones episode.
Oh, I was so bummed. What are the chances? I was like, what are the chances? I saw you in the call sheet. I was like, wait a minute. I looked really far ahead and I saw that you were going to be working, and I just could not believe, you know, because we started Good Wife, and I said, honestly, you know, you kind of helped me build that character because it was so early on. I think it was the first episode.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, it's good because I was like, you know, at the time, I did your first episode on The Good Wife. We got to work together.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such an interesting character. And honestly, you know, sometimes it's difficult as a director because, you know, I'm working with things that are written.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of time with the writer to sort of, you know, really hash out details and mm-hmm. stuff. But I try to get in the actor's head and then ask questions, you know, so I know what to sort of think. But also, you know, to have an actor like you that I so much respect for, and then to feel like, oh God, now he's going to come in and play a drug dealer. Damn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that happens to me.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
like, oh man, how's this going to go? So you look for ways to like make it outside the box, and mm-hmm. you're clearly bring so much charisma and so much intelligence. You know, like you're not playing.
Yeah, I'm not playing it on the nose. I'm trying to play what people would. I mean, because the world of The Good Wife is completely different than the world of, you know, The Wire.
Right.
And that was one of the things that really appealed to me about that particular role. An actor is always looking for something that he can sink his teeth into and something that clicks, both physically and both like material wise, and just there's just something that you can't put your finger on, but when you see it, it clicks, and all of a sudden you're there, and you enjoy it, and you're under the imaginary circumstances, and it fits like a glove. And so for me, I felt like that world. I had been watching Good Wife, you know, I think I came on the first season, and I'd already been watching it as a fan. So when I went in, I think I'd almost gotten on the show 2 or 3 of the times before that, and I was so happy it didn't work out because
me too.
It weren't substantial roles, and I didn't think it was anything that was going to go farther, and it just worked out. Not that this was predetermined.
But we didn't really know
either. No.
Like, I remember doing the first episode, and again, it was like, we're going to play him as a businessman.
Yeah.
In a way, you can move invisibly through that world with all these high-end, you know, politicians mm-hmm. and lawyers, and you're seamless in that world.
Yeah.
Which is great. So I didn't know what was going to happen. I remember the next, like, maybe 6 months later, getting my script for the next episode I was directing, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, Robert King is genius. I'm like, I have Lamont Bishop again. I couldn't believe it. I was
know.
Like, did you plan this? Because he had to, I mean.
I wonder. I've thought about it, too.
His brain works that way, though.
Yeah, it just kind of like, it
was really good.
It was good.
I was really happy. And then I was just looking, because I did 18 episodes of that show. Mm-hmm. You did like 22 episodes of that show.
Yeah. It was
like a whole season of Lamont Bishop.
I know, spread throughout the six seasons, because I was not in the last, spoiler alert, I wasn't in the last season.
Right,
Just couldn't do it. I was obviously working
You're
on
Luke Cage now.
Yeah, but it was odd because they shoot right across the street. We filmed literally across the street, so I'd walk
over. But we're
all
busy. We don't necessarily see each other.
No, I know. I come over and say hello when I can.
I know. It's hard. It's hard. But, when I was looking at doing a little bit of research about Luke Cage, too, and thinking about, when he first came up, he was, he was the first black hero to have his own series in the Marvel world, which is a big deal. 1972, he shows up. And largely, it's a time when, post-civil rights and black exploitation movies are happening. And I just think it's really cool that, to know some of the history of how these characters are born.
Yeah.
And then how they're coming. And, certainly right now, diversity in Hollywood is, a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, a really good time again to be having, you at the center of, a great show.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think diversity, the issue, ever goes away. I think every so often it becomes more pronounced maybe every 10 years or something. There's strides. I mean, we look at, I think back in the 60s or 70s, there was James Earl Jones, and there was, Diane Carroll or something. She had her own show.
Dude, I had a Julia doll.
Oh, yeah.
I had her doll.
So,
are you kidding me? And when I did an episode of White Collar, and I got to work with her.
Oh, my God.
You have no idea.
Did you? Oh, my God. You
I so
the
wish
doll.
I
you didn't
no,
have it. You didn't,
didn't
oh.
have it anymore.
But the fact that you could even remember it and that you had it, she had to know that you were really, you weren't pulling her leg. I mean, that's
no, no, no.
That's
I not loved her, and up. she was lived up to all my imagined dreams about her.
I know,
and she's classy. Have you met her?
I never had a chance. It's odd. It's just one of those things. Randomly, sometimes you get to meet your icons or people that you grow up watching, and sometimes you don't. It's not too late.
You can still meet her.
Still meet her.
I think she did something on Empire, maybe. I saw on Instagram with
it's
her
a small world.
And Lee Daniels or something. But she is Hollywood royalty.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what you feel like around her. It's wow, she's amazing, But anyway, yeah, that was a big deal. That show was a big deal. And so I'm really happy for you, and I was just really, really excited to know that you were doing Luke Cage. And then I have to say, I was super excited when I saw you in Men in Black 3. I know that precedes Luke Cage. But when I saw you on the big screen in that particular role, because, again, I've worked with Will Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's another connection that we have.
First
and
degree.
I was like...
1 degree.
Yeah, 1 degree, exactly. Yeah. But, people... Okay, so I did... The way I worked with him was not on a big movie like you.
Mm-hmm.
But it was on a TV show that his wife did, Hawthorne.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be honest, people warned me, oh my God, he's all over it, it's going to be hard, And and before I went there, I was like, wait a minute. First of all, one, he's Will Smith.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of my favorite actors.
Yeah.
Two, it's his wife's show.
Yeah.
So if he's all over it, it's because it's his wife and he cares.
Yeah.
So what problem really am I going to have with that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then I show up and then I find someone who's so down to earth, who's nothing but complimentary, who doesn't get in my shit at all.
Yeah.
Who's just like, oh, I love the blocking.
Isn't it funny?
Amazing.
It's inevitable. I've had so many of the same similar experiences where people give you these notes about people and you're just like, and honestly, it almost never turns out to be the way they promised or said it would be. And I'm not sure, is it because in this business, and I think of anything in life, you have to remember that everybody treats everybody differently.
True.
That being
True.
Said, I've never really heard that or would expect that from him, but you just never know where this stuff comes from.
Right.
But you get the complete opposite. I mean, he's just, he's a great guy. I learned a lot from him.
So I wanted to know, when you did that movie, was it kind of like, it's so big that you were in and out or?
No, I got a chance to spend some time on set with him. And honestly, he's just a real genuine guy.
Yeah.
And he also has, a group of people around him who are very genuine.
Yeah.
And I felt really at home and, I had Josh Brolin on the set and he was really cool. And obviously Barry, the director was awesome. Everything felt like we were just kind of at camp because most of the scenes I was involved in were at the beach.
Right.
So we were at the beach a lot.
Right.
And so we were at a hotel and we had to stay there because we were working and we didn't have time to go back and forth. So it just really felt like, a chance to just kind of connect. And I learned a lot from him as a professional. I mean, obviously he's a big movie star. And when you watch people, how they have to deal with a lot of pressure, a lot of expectation,
right.
a lot of things around them. Talk about being number one. Number one, it just gets worse and worse. You talk about the budgets and stuff. So he's really
I think there's
grounded.
Lessons to be learned about people that because for me, it can also work, let's just say the flip side, which is I have naively gone in. I've been warned because, I do that thing. As a guest director, it's like, And you probably do that thing. If you get a, like a job on a show, or you're a guest on a show or something, you kind of do your homework. Like, hey, you want to call other actors,
do you know anybody
or directors?
That,
like, what's expect, up with these people?
You're going to hear it. You don't even ask. As soon as you tell somebody you're on that job, somebody's going to offer you some knowledge.
Sometimes you got to seek out other directors because we're working a lot, you know, and sometimes we don't all get together. So, I have also gotten like a job and then heard like terrible things and then naively gone like, you know what? Just what you said. Everyone has their own experience. I'm not a jerk. I'm going to bring, you know, I know what I'm doing. Yeah. I'm just going to bring myself and it'll be different for me. That's also another pothole where that's that's bullshit.
Yeah.
That person's a jerk.
Well, expect the worst. I would say expect the worst.
I'm the tricky, most, right?
I expect the worst. Prepare for the worst. Hope for the best. You know, brace yourself.
Brace yourself. TV is all about politics.
Oh, yeah.
All of it, right?
Yeah,
so that's why I had to bring my picture.
Awesome.
I get that. My picture of Will, Mill and me.
Oh.
I had to do it because I'm like, am I ever going to have a chance to ever show anyone this picture?
I know. You got to put it up somewhere.
I have it at home.
Framed.
I have it in my office. But it was just mainly because it was that thing. Look, I started this thing because I'm like, I just want to talk about collaborate. There's a lot of egos in our business. And you're
there are,
and you're not one of those guys. You're
I'm working on it. I'm working on it.
You can't. You're just like a good person.
I'm growing it. They say this business will ruin you if you know because you watch people sometimes and people have created monsters. It's not like it happened by themselves. A lot of people have been nurtured into creation, and so eventually they become a monster. Now that being said, I don't think you can make something that wasn't essentially there. I mean, you can put water on it and kind of like try to nurture it, but eventually you are what you are. So I hope to be the same person now that I will be if I get any more successful or if I just maintain myself. I don't know. You know, I think I'll be the same person.
Well, when you watch like the success of Hamilton, and I see Lin-Manuel Miranda, in interviews and stuff, and I'm like, I keep seeing the same guy from the beginning to like now and this and that. And I'm like, you know, I don't know him.
Maybe he's just acting.
But he is an actor.
Maybe he's
true.
Acting, you know.
And all, you guys are there's really
a lot
good
of,
at that
There's
stuff
a lot
too.
Of actors who people love because they see him on talk shows and stuff, but they are really jerks.
I know. It's true.
they're such jerks. As soon as the camera stops rolling, they say cut. Another person comes out. I haven't met him, but he seems like a great guy.
I would like to.
I'm going to see the show, and then I'll go backstage and I'll let you know.
Oh, you haven't seen the show yet?
I've had two opportunities, but because I was filming.
You're Luke Cage. I had to keep having to say
I can't do it. So I'm, you know, Renee for a good wife.
Of course.
So she's you know.
Just got nominated for Tony.
Yes.
Renee Elise Goldsberry. Superstar.
Yeah.
I started the Public Theater. I can't get tickets now.
Oh, yeah. Well, she started there. She told me when I was on the set of Good Wife, she was developing this project.
Yeah.
She told me it must have been at least a couple years now.
Yep.
She told me and she seemed really excited about it. She said, you got to come check it out.
She's like, it's totally different.
Totally different. And
I know.
And I was like, really, really? And of course, I live in LA and I just wasn't around. And, you know, and she never told me. I never heard back from her. I blamed her. I said, you told me to come check it out in previews, but you didn't tell me. You didn't call me. You didn't give me any information. So here we go.
She was busy.
Busy.
She's still doing a lot of Good Wife when she was starting that.
Yeah, yeah. She's really, you know.
Have you done theater?
I've done theater, but I haven't done theater really since 2008. And
Are you interested in doing more theater?
I am, actually. The problem is if you're working a lot and you live in L.A. and you're doing most of your work in New York and you kind of have a bi-coastal life and your family's on the West Coast, you don't want to sign up for anything that's going to make you stay in New York even longer.
Right.
So it's not practical because otherwise I would never be in L.A.
Now, how do you deal with that? Because always seems like a very glamorous thing that we do to people outside. But, you know, it's very hard.
Yeah.
And it definitely takes its toll. I don't even have children. You have an 11-month-old at home.
Yeah.
And you know, just being away from my husband, we deal with this right now.
Separation.
As we speak.
Yep.
Reintegrating is like horrific.
Yep.
You know, I come in late last night. I walk in the house. There's no semblance of how I would have the house in front of me.
Nope.
So I'm like, immediately the Tasmanian devil. So I'm like, fuck this shit. I need a space that's clean. You know what I mean?
Like, clutter. If your world is cluttered around, your mind is cluttered. It's hard to focus.
Right. But meanwhile, he's abandoned doing tax season and like buried with like the pipe and the pool breaking and the washer dryer break. You know, like everything at once.
All at once.
Air conditioner guy doesn't show up. You know, one of those weeks. Mm-hmm. So that's what I walk into.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like reintegration time. This takes a few days. By the time it happens and we're all lovey-dovey, it's time to leave.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with that?
It's More or less, it's pretty much like that. I mean, except now it was like that before. Now with the baby involved, it's really hard. I mean, we have a nanny that helps out because my wife has a real job and has mm-hmm. a career, and she needs to also have her time to focus on her work, which never seems to end. And, you know, she works for Netflix, oddly enough. So she's always, you know, doing stuff at work and at home. She's kind of, you know, 24/7 in a sense. I mean, it's not like doctor hours where someone calls you 1 a.m.
What does she do?
She's a director of talent acquisitions. But it's not that kind of talent that people would think. It's not actors. It's behind the scenes people, production and lawyers and finance people and, you know, studios. Yeah. So she's
on
very
the business side.
The business side.
Got it.
So I'm very proud of her. She works hard, but it's very difficult because when I took the job, obviously, she was pregnant, and it was the plan that I would be home working on Agent X, which was filming in L.A.
Right.
And this opportunity came up, and it was something that I couldn't say no to. I had to explore it, and so we tried to make it work. And making it work meant me flying back every weekend, pretty much. Yeah, the only weekends I missed were the weekends where we had an event, like one or two times where I had to, like, stay. Or she would fly out and stay for a couple weeks, and that way I wouldn't have to fly out. She would bring the baby with her, and I'd fly out and come back with her and the baby, and then fly back. It was just every weekend. I would work on a Fraturday, as they call them, get off at 7 a.m. and fly back to LA on a.
Because you can't even really make a plan ahead because you don't know how late you're going to go on Friday night.
Well, no, but I'd always take that early morning flight of a. I talk to the first ADs. I'd let them know my situation. I kind of feel it out, and then I'd either take the 7 a.m. or the 6 a.m. or the 9 o'clock, and then I would be in L.A. sometime around afternoon, and then I would spend the day and try and stay up as late as I could that night. Hopefully get a good night's sleep, and the baby would, if the baby were sleeping properly,
didn't get a good night's sleep.
Well, luckily, it was weird. The baby would sleep pretty much consistently when I was home. When I wasn't home, she would have to deal with...
That's even more heartbreaking.
Yeah, so... But then I'd fly back the next day and come back to work on Monday. So I did that for a long time, and I looked forward to those weekends.
So you would fly out on Sunday night?
I fly out on Sunday night. Sometimes
they were okay with that.
That's hairy
because you got weather situations.
I know. I got lucky. I just kept doing it. I don't think they were ever okay with it, but they were also understanding that they couldn't stop me because there was really no way for me to consistently. I couldn't keep my family. I could not see my kid and my wife for weeks at a time.
Right.
Especially with a little newborn. It's just not that simple. You can't throw money at every problem.
No, and she can't leave her job. She's doing well. Netflix is busier than ever.
She'll be stressed out. I mean, she's dealing with it by herself. I mean, she didn't sign up to be a single mother.
Right.
And my kid would honestly not know who I was when I walked through the door months later. So we made an agreement, and that was part of the agreement that I would commit to coming home. And it was, you know, it was taxing, but I got used to it. I slept on a plane, and I just had to deal with it.
So now you're here.
Mm-hmm.
But you're doing a lot of press things and stuff like that, right?
A little bit of press stuff. My heavy press load doesn't start until closer to the fall when the release of Luke Cage, which is September 30th. That's going to probably start about a few weeks prior to that and start doing that global attack.
Got it. And Defenders won't be all you.
No. The four of us will be sharing the load.
So it won't be until Luke Cage season 2, which I'm going to put out to the universe. It's going to happen.
Well, fingers crossed.
So that's good. So you'll have a little time now to, like, get on track. Yeah. I just, like, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm going to take the summer off because I want to, A, develop things. I want to get my own show on there. I want to pitch, you know, all that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Walking Dead comes along.
Oh.
And I'm like, I can't say no to that.
Well, Atlanta is a tough shoot. That's a tough location.
July, August.
Oh.
Yeah, rough.
The humidity, bugs.
Yeah.
Reptiles.
Yes. But I can't say no.
You can't say no. I mean, it's a
juggernaut.
That's your summer right there.
I know.
How many do you have to do?
I'm just doing one.
Well, that's going to take it.
It's big, though.
That's four, yeah, it's like.
But I'm really
excited. That's a month right there gone.
I'll sweat. I'll just have a good time no matter what.
Oh, well, bring some bug spray and,
yeah, I will.
And put your socks, tuck your pants.
Last summer I was in Pittsburgh in a mountain.
Oh.
And yeah, I have one of my only fears in life, and it's big, is bugs. Mm-hmm. I know it's like universal. I mean, that's very common.
Yeah, certain kind of bugs.
But I was on. It actually helped me. I did the show Outsiders, and we were up literally in the mountains, in the woods, and where there's things crawling on you. Like you're literally standing there talking to somebody.
And something's on their shoulder.
You're just picking off. You're continuing the conversation. You just get to the point where you're just picking them off all the time.
Oh,
God. But it helped me with my fear of bugs.
I guess so. I mean,
on what you got to do.
Oh, wow.
It's crazy, right? So maybe that's going to happen. Maybe I'll take that a little deeper on Walking Dead.
Or maybe you just get a suit that's like zipped up to the neck.
Some people had that like mosquito thing
like,
going
like beekeeper.
On. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So if you could do like any role, like what's your fantasy of like doing a big movie?
I don't fantasize about, you know, like big movies much. I fantasize about characters, certain things that I want to do to stretch myself as an actor. I want to get back to doing stage, and I want to do some Shakespeare. I have a dream to do the Jack Johnson story, the first black heavyweight, to ever win the belt. And to his life is really more fascinating than his dealings in the ring, because people don't know a lot about him. But he had like
But I have something I want to. Mm-hmm. We don't have to get into it now, but we could. Yeah. Well, I have a story that I want to tell. I want to get the rights to this guy, and I want to tell this story.
Yeah.
Of Dewey Bozella. Do you know him?
No.
Oh, dude, we're gonna talk.
Okay.
Because I was thinking about you.
Oh, wow.
For this part, and it's this incredible story of this guy who was wrongly accused, mm-hmm. went to prison mm-hmm. for 26 years, mm-hmm. didn't do the crime of like
Shocker.
Beating and killing a 92-year-old woman.
And this was a long time ago, right?
No, not that long ago.
Forensics was around.
Yeah, he's what is he now? He's in his 50s now. Mm-hmm. So he spent 26 years he was in jail.
Okay.
So anyway, he ended up meeting this woman in jail who worked in the prison. They got married. She always believed in him. He was always innocent. He went up 3 times, you know, whatever. Finally, he gets out. Mm-hmm. Now his dream, and he boxed a little while he was in prison, but his dream was to be a boxer. When he was a kid, that's all he wanted to do.
Wow.
So once he got out, he ended up boxing, and he ended up being, he's the oldest guy to ever professionally box.
It almost sounds like a hurricane.
And he won.
Is that not the hurricane?
He won. No, it's not. This guy, it's just in 2011, wow. He won. This isn't even old.
This is current.
Current.
Wow.
He does inspirational things, speeches. Now, you know that ESPN 30 by 30?
30 for 30?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's on one of those. And
I
have
to see it. I love those.
You'd be perfect
for this
guy.
It's not one I haven't seen. I just saw the one with Shaq and Penny, which I like all of them.
They're so well made. Mm-hmm. But this guy's story is like, you know, it's just about perseverance, man. It's just like no matter what the world
throws at
you. And you know what? Some people in this business is like that. Like, you know, some people have been in it for so long, mm-hmm. and older actors, and you're like, I get so much inspiration from them because I'm like, how do you survive this bullshit for like 40 years?
You don't know anything else. I don't think anybody who's an old actor, an old veteran guy who's been in this business for a long time, paying their dues, I don't think they have other options. You can't. I mean, sure, you make ends meet. Maybe some of them have day jobs. Some of them grind doing different things. But I don't think they actually know anything else. If you could do anything else, you would. I got people who I know who really, really want to be actors, and I talk to them all the time. But they have really serious day jobs.
Right.
And they are passionate about acting, but they have really serious day jobs that they went to school for, and they, you know, they committed a certain part of their life to doing that. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it's like, being an actor is kind of like being, I don't know, a bodybuilder, which is really weird, or being a basketball player or a football player, somebody who, because you have to do the thing that you're trying to do over and over and over and over till it becomes second nature to you. And if you spend time doing anything else, you can't spend the same amount of time doing that.
Right.
So you can't be a master of too many things. You can be a jack of all trades, but you can't master them all, you know? So
when did you know you wanted to be an actor?
Since I was like 8 years old.
How did you know that?
I was, I think I got the bug when I was watching, Soldier's Story on HBO.
Okay.
HBO had come around in the early 80s, and that was like my window to the world, because I didn't go out a lot. I lived in a rural small town in South Carolina, so I didn't get a chance to go to movies
right.
a lot.
Right,
my
right.
mom didn't take me out. I saw like 2 movies growing up. That was The Last Dragon, The Last Dragon with Bruce Leroy. And then there was The Golden Child. So, and those are like the two movies I saw until I got a chance to drive and take myself.
Right.
So I was pretty much staying in
Golden
the house.
Golden Child is Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy. Yeah,
yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Love him.
Okay. I know. It's so funny. That guy's on Game of Thrones now, but that's, you know, it's so funny now. Like that's the guy from, you know. So it's so weird. So seeing A Soldier's Story was something, because it was a lot of African-American guys in that movie.
That's a great movie.
It was a great movie. It had won, I think it got nominated for an Oscar. I think it was... Norman Jewison mm-hmm. was director, I think, mm-hmm. believe so. Yep, and Denzel was in it, and Howard Rollins, and yep. it was just a great. Yep. It was a great year for movies. Agnes of God, so many good movies. I remember watching that. I'm a movie buff because I watched pretty much everything from the 70s into the 80s and the 90s. And I remember watching that movie, and I said, everybody in this movie is so good. And I said to myself, you know, I really think I could do that. And my mom had wanted to be an actress, but she couldn't pursue her dream because her dad, you know, wasn't supportive of it. And she wanted to go to New York. And when she went to New York, she went there for like a month or so. And her mother got really, really sick. And she had to come back home and help take care of the, you know, family.
Oh, wow.
And her mother ended up dying.
Oh, wow.
And she never returned and went back to New York. So I always felt like it was something that she wanted to do. And I felt like somehow, I mean, I was very passionate about it, but somehow that kind of was coming through me in a sense. I was, you know, had to carry this.
Well, she was very supportive of you, I'm sure.
She
understood where you were coming from.
She was. No one ever told me no. It was the oddest thing. I mean, I have had to manufacture chips on my shoulder my whole life. No one's ever told me I couldn't do something. It's really annoying. I'm always looking for somebody to say no and butt up against me and say I couldn't do things. And going through school and my family, everyone was supportive, so.
Right, right. Kind of shit did you make up to, like, throw roadblocks in your way?
I want to know. No, if I tell you, then it won't work. See, these are petty things that people would go, really? No, but no.
Really?
Honestly, slights along the way. Most of the slights came along probably in grad school because that's where I really met adversity for the first time.
Right.
I had kind of had an easy ride up until that point. And in grad school, I kind of got picked on because I was, you know, the youngest in the class. And I think, you know, I wasn't as serious as the other people who had been out and about in the world, had mm-hmm. tried acting a little bit, mm-hmm. done some New York theater and come in and wanted to still be actors. And everyone was much more focused than I was. I was still, you know, I was 22. I was coming in with this undergrad thing of, you know, party a little bit and I'll get some work done.
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't realize how much work I had to do to study the technique and how to and rehearsals and everything else and just controlling my instrument. So I was just not ready for it. So I came in on a you know.
And some people called you on that shit.
Oh yeah, they called me on it. Most people that called me on it were the faculty, and rightly so. And I thank them to this day because, you know, they called me on it, but they also gave me a chance to continue on the second year instead of kicking me out.
Right.
Because I don't know where I would have been.
Right.
But I was called. But my classmates, obviously, they focused on me too, and I kind of took that personal because I looked at those people who were in my class, some of them, and who had, you know, I was like, well, you know, you guys have been out and tried it and you failed.
Right.
I haven't tried it yet.
Right.
So you're coming back after trying it and you think because you've tried it the wrong way, now you're going to get. So I had my own.
Right, right. So you had your own narrative.
I had my own narrative about my own life. And I think that that's key. So it was me against the world. That's how I looked at it.
I've always had that narrative about my life as a director, too.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Like, whatever anybody's doing, female director, this, that. Doesn't matter. I'm from New Hampshire. My dad was a bookie. I don't know anyone in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
That's it. It's like you're meant to do something. You know it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what you said. It's like, well, I know I could do other jobs.
Yeah.
But there was really nothing else I'm going to be doing.
Yeah.
It's like not a question.
There's nothing necessarily I could get up in the morning and do. I couldn't get myself to do anything else besides this.
No. So what are some of, is there like an experience that you had collaborating that you could think of that is just like, it was like the best collaboration?
Wow. You know, I think, you know, going back to, staying with the theme, Soldier's Story. I did a soldier's play as a theater piece mm-hmm. back in 2005. It was a revival of this movie, which was first a play, and Charles Fuller, who wrote it and got a Pulitzer for it in the early 80s, came and I think he teaches at Temple still, but he came and he was there for the production's revival.
Wow.
And a lot of up and coming young black actors were involved in it. Some of them who I'm still friends with to this day. But it was a big deal because, you know, for me, I was really on the edge of, you know, I'd done Million Dollar Baby, which had got an Oscar, but I was a small role and I was trying mm-hmm. to figure out, you know, I'm always thinking about what's next. And when, for me, when I think about what's next, I never think about something that resembles what I've already done.
Right.
So I'm really concerned about my career because every time I do something, I go, that's great, but what else can I do that's not that? And right. that's not how this business works.
Right.
You usually get offered or you get put in line for things that are similar to what you've already done.
Right.
So that being said, I got this a chance to work with Jo Bonney, who's a female director in the theater world. Her husband, Eric Bogosian, very collaborative couple. I was auditioning. I remember the role I auditioned for was CJ Memphis, who was the character, the blues player who played the guitar and was a guy, you know, spoiler alert, who killed himself in prison because they threw him in there because of something that he didn't do. And it was a really depressing thing because the Sarge had a real hate for him, racially driven hate and just self-loathing. So it was a really pitiful character, I would say, for what people, you know, how people would perceive him. So anyway, when that role was available, I immediately heard about it, and they had been looking for the role for a while, and they couldn't find anybody. And I said, "That's me. I can do this role. That's something I can really connect."
And you could play guitar?
No, I couldn't play guitar.
Okay, that was the other. thing.
So that's the other thing.
Did you tell him you could?
I had to tell him I couldn't because I was the only guy that walked in the audition. All these people, I didn't have a guitar. Everybody's outside tuning their guitars. They're in the waiting area, you know, playing away, warming up, singing and stuff. I got no guitar. And I come in and I'm like, you know, it's just, when I think about it, it was insane. And I still try to figure out how they gave me the chance to do it. I just couldn't figure it out. But, you know, I was definitely passionate about it, but I was also determined and certain that I could do the role. And I think sometimes when you're certain and you're really focused and, you know, you have to do the work, you give the good audition. You know, we talked about it. I did have to sing an a cappella piece for them so they could hear that, but I could sing or not hold a tune. And we talked about the guitar thing and just we had a real, you know, moment where, you know, can you pull this off? I mean, we have this much time and this is what you have to do. Do you think you can do it? And I had to bullshit him.
Yeah.
I had to tell him it wasn't bullshit from at the moment. At the moment, I believed it.
Yeah, of course.
I said, hey, sure. You know, I have dexterity in my fingers.
Of course.
My family's musical. I can pull this off. I work really hard. I'm going to get this done. I'm not going to fail you.
You're focused. You're hardworking. And you know, you want it.
So Jo Bonney sat across the table. She asked me that. And I said, sure. And I cannot tell you. I'm sure the people sitting next to her, the producers and people who were involved, were looking at her probably thinking, are you crazy? And sure enough, we get the first day of rehearsal. And again, I'm not playing guitar by now. I got a guitar, not playing it. So we're doing a read through. The parts come in when I'm supposed to play. I got nothing. I mean, I'm picking notes. I am. And people are looking at me like, oh my God, are you kidding me? We open in, you know, in less than 2 months. We open in 6 weeks and you don't know how to play at all. This is just unheard of. So we had a professional come in who helped me train. I worked my butt off. I mean, I played guitar and hammered away on those chords all day, all night.
Well, I had
the calluses on my finger. I was making such horrible music for so long in my room, in the car. I was with my wife. Anywhere I could pull the guitar out, I was working on it. And it was progressing, but not at a fast pace. So I was just, I think probably a week before we opened, maybe less than a week, it finally clicked in because I had to sing and play at the same time, not to mention the character working on. I felt like I was working twice as hard as everybody else because I had to do the character, but I was also trying to play and sing as if I had been doing it for years. So, I, you know, but it was a sink or swim moment. If I didn't do that, I don't think I would have had a career because everybody in New York, I mean, once people saw the casting directors, the people in New York who watch plays, when they saw it, I got a lot more opportunities because we got great reviews. And if I didn't do well, I think it would have kind of been a bad moment for me.
It would have been bad. Have you played the guitar since?
Nope. I played. You know, it's funny. I thought I would have picked it up and kept going, but I dropped it. But
it was,
you know,
all
what?
About that character.
I know I can do it. And I said, you know what? If I had to do it again, I can do
it. So that was a good collaboration about a director believing in you.
Believing in me and just really, you know, and I've always had, you know, great relationships with female directors. I've always, you know, gravitated towards female directors. There's a nurturing thing there. There's something that they don't usually, not all of them are the same, but they don't lead with a hammer. They come across with a little more, you know, subtlety, and that helps a lot.
Right.
You know, they don't have to, you know, try to.
I have a theory about that. I think it's because you talk about confidence.
Uh-huh.
Basically, that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You like had the confidence and people bought into it.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, as females, I feel like we have a lot of confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't have to act like tyrants.
Yeah.
Because we just know, and we've had to like work and be a part of. And also, again, it's like that's why I have this podcast, because I enjoy collaborating.
Mm-hmm.
What I love is like working with other people. And then as you're having the conversation, as you're talking about, as you're throwing ideas out there, something else comes.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it can be very challenging sometimes when people let fear get in the way.
Fear, you know?
Particularly when it comes to being on set.
Yeah.
Because on set, there's so many things happening at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many, you know, people involved with ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many, what I love about production, like love. And what I love about my job is that I get to watch a lot of individuals, say 100 people at a time, right? All owning their piece. Whether it's making sure this prop is in the right place.
And the level of water is there.
The tie is straight.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, the lighting guy, whether the flag is up. Like, everyone is owning a detail of what's going into that frame.
Yeah.
And of course, the actors are owning their character and their part of the story. And me, I get to, like, watch everyone doing their thing and try to just tell one story with it. You know what I mean? And you know, that's... To not honor that and observe that and to go in and just be like, yo, this is da-da-da-da-da. I see people's spirits. I see them close up.
Yeah.
I see them get smaller.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see them open up and, like, have a good idea.
Yeah.
I'll take a good idea from anybody.
That's the thing about it. As a director, you have the carte blanche. You have the power. You could go in any department and just move stuff around. And it can be done. It's up to you how you use that power.
Right. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's the real fun.
Yeah, it is. And I love, well, going back to, so you said I'd be number one. And so being the lead in Cage, I finally got a chance to, I guess, impose my approach and my aura or my personal desire of what I felt this experience should be like on set. And for me, it always comes back to everyone should feel comfortable enough to do whatever it is that they are there to do and not feel like the minute they do something wrong, they're going to get fired.
Right.
There should be no fear
right.
on set. If you're operating from a place of fear, it's no good.
No.
And you're not going to look forward to going to work. You're not going to look forward to participating with this other person. And it goes from everyone, the boom guy, the camera guy, the props guy. Everyone needs to feel like they can open their mouth and say something, whether we actually use that idea or not.
Doesn't matter. But that's interesting because I think, you know, like I've watched Juliana Margulies as number one, like set the tone for the show.
Yeah.
Set the tone for how people behave on set.
Yeah.
You know, you're professional, know your lines.
Yeah.
You know, do your job.
Yeah.
And then honor the crew, the camera. You know, realize that people around you are working, like, harder than you, almost. You know what I mean? But just honor that everyone's busting their ass.
I learned a lot from her. She's
amazing.
She was very, very professional. And you know, and she's a different approach because, you know, like, her versus, like, Will. You know, Will, you talk about him being number one, you know, or like, Kevin Bacon and people I've been around.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot of energy sometimes that goes into being number one that's not actually... you know, energy you expel in front of the camera, you know, people around you, it's energy, people take energy away from you because after the scene, you're still there to kind of still be available for people because people need stuff from you at all times. As you know, there's always something that you need to do besides the work that you're being paid to do. There's always, is the costume fitting. There's another interview that in between this take, you have to go over here. You have to be here. You have to go put your face in a mold for another hour.
Yeah.
You have to, you know, someone wants to, you know, have your ear for a minute to talk about something.
Or even just wardrobe questions.
Just wardrobe questions.
Yeah, you're going to wear the belt in the scene. Something. You're not going to wear the belt. Like,
not every day you want to have that go on.
I know. And
you know, especially when you're trying to prep for a intense scene or something. Most of the times I've seen actors, they snap at them or they get really irritated or irritable and stuff like that. And you know, it's tough. It's tough. But I always feel like when you watch the way people treat people, it does have a ripple effect because if you treat, I don't care who it is, it could be a producer who's on equal terms and say, you know, you guys are eye to eye. It's not like, you know, you could fire him, he can fire you, whatever.
Right.
You're talking to each other. People watch how you behave. If you make him feel like, I don't know what, he's going to walk around and make somebody else feel that way. That's just the way it is.
It's a trickle down.
I don't feel good about the way I feel about, you know, the person that you've talked to feels about this small. And then therefore they have to go and make someone else feel that small. And it's innate. It's something that's a reaction. They don't plan on doing it.
Yeah.
They just feel bad. Now they want to feel better.
Yeah.
Sometimes they go and make someone else feel bad.
Somebody's angry at them, so then they're going to pass on that anger.
Yeah. They can't get an answer. They're stressed. You ask them for something. they stonewall you now because they're not getting information. They don't get information, and you can't have information. It's a ripple effect.
So you don't want that. I mean, I know the people, you know, the crew and stuff from Luke Cage or from Jessica Jones for the large part. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, it's a different group of actors.
So
I think it's cool. I mean, this is what I'm talking about, you being a good person, because you go into that with the concern of other people.
Yeah, everybody.
Not with like, oh, well, now I'm Luke Cage, so I can do shit my way and da-da-da-da, and everyone's here for me. Which is what some people will do.
Yeah, some people, I mean, you know who's number one on set. On some sets you walk on, there's no question who's number one because they let you know about it every 5 minutes.
But I can really respect that you want to set a tone and that you want that kind of environment. So what do you do in that kind of environment? And I'm not looking for specifics, but... is if there's a director that comes in or a day player that comes in that is a bit of a jerk or isn't treating, you know, sometimes directors, guest directors will show up and really they'll know who to be nice to.
And they
will know who to, like, they don't care. They don't want to know that guy's name. How do you deal with that?
I try to do subtle things that, you know, there have been times when directors, first ADs, I pulled them aside and said, you know, you weren't so nice just now, and it doesn't look nice. Like you know, and I'll call them on their shit because
good
I feel like sometimes, you know, and it happens a lot with, you know, sometimes the first ADs and stuff like that, because they're under the gun, you know, their job.
They're under
is
a lot of pressure,
and sometimes it's just like they don't have the time or patience to speak kind words or just to be patient or just to say what it is that they're trying to say to the smallest of people on set.
Right.
I'm talking about background. It's just,
right.
it's there are people on set that literally they could be smashed with a backhand and be pushed away and no one would even notice they're gone or no one would care.
Oh.
And, you know, and that's, and they're, but those people are there because they really want to be there.
Right.
You know, they're as passionate about, they're so happy to be in the frame. When I say in the frame, they're just barely in the frame.
Well, the frame is empty without them.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like real life without the background people.
We're asking them to fill the background with life and to not make it, not to draw attention to themselves.
Right.
But at the same time.
But they still have to react.
Yeah. And at the same time, if an eye glance comes over there.
Right.
For it to be real, subtle and real and authentic.
Right.
And sometimes as a director, you know, you can pull up a frame and you want to actually get a shot of a certain couple doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they're there all day.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that sometimes they're tired. They're not actually laying on a trailer. They're not hanging out with no one's asking them, hey, are you thirsty?
They don't get their own space
to
hang out
No one's asking them, are you hungry, thirsty? You know, when they get the craft services,
Right.
I mean, sometimes, you know, they're the last person to go, I need a bathroom break, because they're afraid to ask. You know?
So they eat lunch after we all eat lunch.
Which is, you know, I mean,
it's always weird.
It should almost, to me, it should just be a separate table for them and have the same exact thing. And
I
don't get that. It drives me. So, but I guess it's for another day. But I talk to all the background. I talk to all the people. I talk to everyone. Like, we shoot outside at night, and it's cold, 3 a.m. They're standing out there. Between takes, even if I'm not on set sometimes, if I'm just in the video village or wherever I am, I walk around and I mingle with the people who are not even, you know, they're so not
that
in
means
the
a lot to them.
They're there for that.
I know.
Because they don't get anything else.
I know.
And sometimes they want a picture or something, and I give them one.
Right.
Because they don't sell they're going to get.
Right.
They're not getting paid very well. They're not getting a good meal. They're not getting a ride home even.
Not getting holiday pay.
Nope.
They're not getting the benefits
overtime
that we get.
It's just, so I look at that from, so when I see people who treat them badly, I cringe.
You want to say something
to
them.
And I have to say something to them because otherwise, you know, it's not, it's just, because that person's going to walk away feeling like that from my set. That's
right.
What I feel like. It's like, I don't call this my show all the time. It's not, I don't say it's
no,
my show.
No, but I love that you take responsibility and that you're trying to be professional.
Yeah.
And I think that's beautiful.
Yeah.
I really do. I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
I think that's
I mean, listen, it's a slippery slope. I've gotten caught in places where I can't, you know, I've made conversations with people I can't get away from because now I have to do my job and they want so much from you. But I'll see those people out and about in the streets, or I'll see them on another show and they'll remind me of how we met and how I know them and all this other stuff. And people, this is a small business.
But also, I've gotten better at navigating that too.
Yeah.
Where it's like, when I really can't focus on them, I always say thank you. I say, hey, whatever. You know what? I don't have time right now. I got to move on. You just have to talk to me.
I don't think as a director, you really can. I think for me, I'm in a better position to do that than you, because you have to think about all kinds of things.
Well, it depends. If it's look, when a background is really good, mm-hmm. just using background as an example,
yeah.
I will take note of that person.
Uh-huh.
I do pay attention to who's there, because mm-hmm. I don't want my eye going to the wrong person in the frame.
Yeah.
So I do pay attention to all those people. Mm-hmm. And when they give those good reactions,
oh yeah,
I make sure to tell the second.
Like, you know, in the jury box,
who's usually the one on set, you know, dealing with background. I make sure to tell them, hey, that person is great.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, you know, like, let's just make sure you use them again. Mm-hmm. Certainly on The Good Wife, because I was there so much, you get mm-hmm. to know certain people.
Yeah.
But it is tricky, because sometimes you're like, you know, you can open a door and then they'll just run through it, and then you're getting headshots and you're getting mm-hmm. this and that. So
I know.
Sometimes, you know, and I'm just honest. I just like, look, I can take it, but I'm not going to remember.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, I don't
do.
Know what to do
that's
with
all
it.
That's all you can do. I mean, people have given me videos, DVDs.
People give me scripts all the time. I try to read their scripts, and sometimes I'm like, I'm not even right to direct this.
Yeah.
Do they want notes from me? And now I just say, you know what, give me like 6 months. Mm-hmm. Eventually I'll get to it.
Yeah.
But it's hard.
That gives you some lead time, at least.
Yeah, and I'm honest.
I refer them because I say, listen, I'm only on this business because I have a hard agent, a hard working agent, people that work for me. And without them, I don't know. I'm not the kind of person that would have been able to do it on my own. I'm not a self starter. I need professionals to do certain things around me because that's what they're good at.
And
I'd rather give them a cut and pay them to do those things. So I say, listen, I would love to help you, but honestly, all I can do for you is just give you advice. That's all
but
I can
I
do.
Love, so you love collaborating. You feel it's a collaboration with your agent and your managers.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's good.
I often talk to them and question things that we do or say and stuff like that because it is a collaboration. And let's be honest, when you're paying people around you, you want to make sure that everybody's got something to bring to the table, because it's easy to get very lazy in this business. And I also want to be challenged. So sometimes I need to make sure that I'm on edge. So I try to figure out how to make sure that I'm not falling asleep at the wheel, you know?
Well, I'm a self-starter. So that's the piece we could have a whole other conversation about. I definitely need your advice about that, because it's the piece I'm always
struggling with. The
representation is always tricky for me.
You
know what I mean? Because I take responsibility and I'm a hustler.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all good. It's all good. So before we go, we have like 3 minutes left.
Oh, my God.
I know, that's crazy. What? It goes really, really fast, right?
Okay.
But before we go, tell everybody, you know, what you have coming up or whatever you want to tell them, tell them.
Okay, well, listen. I mean, obviously, The Word's Out. Luke Cage is coming out September. Obviously, The Word's Out. Luke Cage is coming out September 30th. There's a small teaser out right now. If you haven't seen Jessica Jones, please watch Jessica Jones. You directed episode 10. Episode 10.
It's AKA 1,000 Cuts.
AKA 1,000 Cuts. Listen, it's you don't have to watch Jessica Jones to watch Luke Cage, but I really would encourage you to do so. It's all wrapped up. Right now, I don't know what I'm going to do next because I just need a break. So I'm not promoting anything. I'm not trying to pump anything. Or
you do any of the social media stuff?
I don't do social media. This is something that I do not participate in.
We're so lucky you're here.
Yeah, I'd rather come out and talk to people. And if I want to talk to you, I'd rather get your phone number and actually talk to people. I'm not one to.
Well, next time we could do a live podcast.
We'll do a live podcast.
Where they could call in.
Okay, yeah, that's even better.
That would be totally fun.
Yeah.
Once it comes out, maybe in September, in the fall, you'll come back. We'll have it live.
Yep.
And people can do that. Because this is really a collaboration right here. Because people are listening. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And we're gonna know what they have to say, and they can comment online. And, you know, this is our unique kind of collaboration.
Yeah. We'll do it old-fashioned way.
Yeah, we'll do it with the phone calls. I like that part. So do you think, just as a quick question, do you think that movies, I love that you watch movies, by the way. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge 70s movie person, but mm-hmm. I'm a big movie person. So do you think that movies have the power to change us?
I think that movies have the power to, at the very least, make us hold a mirror up to our lives and to actually acknowledge things, whether it actually, because sometimes they linger and it really does have a lasting effect. The problem is sometimes people, again, fail to act on those impulses because, you know, here we are talking about this current epidemic again, that people talk about diversity, and I always say it never goes away. It's just, you know,
mm-hmm.
another form. Every 10 years, something else changes. We have another show. It's always been there. So I just feel like, you know, movies and television, especially now, I feel like television is kind of taking the lead. I feel like it has a chance to inspire people to do things, but ultimately they have to act on them. And I don't think the therapeutic thing that we have after we watch a great movie or a great television series and we really don't want it to end and we are so caught up in it, I don't think that's enough. And I think that, you know, again, it's fiction. Mm. Sometimes we're getting our stuff from real life. I mean, life is stranger than fiction. You've always heard that. Right. I think life has to start influencing film as opposed to the other way around. We have to start being like, my thing about Luke Cage, I hope Luke Cage influences people to be their own heroes. I don't want them to sit and watch Luke Cage. I want you to be inspired to do the things that you can do in your community to be a hero. You know, you should have a little bit of Luke Cage in you. So don't just sit back and put your feet up and then go back and doing the same thing you were doing before. You know, make change.
Yeah, make change. Make change. I love that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. See, you're so inspiring. You're just a good guy. Good person. That's from the heart. So thank you. And thank you for coming here. Because everyone that would be Luke Cage would not show up.
Well, look.
For a little director like me. I really appreciate it.
Me and you go way back.
Dude, I'm telling you, Dewey Bozzella, we're going to make it happen.
All right.
Okay, good. And you can find me, I am on social media, on Facebook, Rosemary Rodriguez, and on Twitter, on Instagram, at Rosemary Directs, which is a cool way to like, you know, I just feel grateful. Mm-hmm. Like when I get beat down by the business and I'm posting pictures of with this one, that one, I'm like, fuck, man, I really love what I do. Sometimes, you know.
Yeah, and the fans can connect with you and inspire.
It's really fun.
Keep you lifted up.
They notice shots. They notice things. And I'm like, wow, it is like having a fan club. But, you know, again, I'm only a director. But anyway.
Holy.
So I have a movie, Silver Skies. Get on Silver Skies, the movie Facebook page. Share the page, like the page. And remember, you know, thank you guys for listening, collaborating, and just keep collaborating in your lives as well. Inspire change and collaborate. Listen to those around you.
Absolutely.
Have a good one.
Come on, people. It's time to live it up.